Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome along to the Rugby Pod, brought to you as usual this week by our good friends at Guinness. We'll be doing live shows in pubs across the UK and Ireland during the Guinness Six Nations. The two London ones are sold out, as is the one in Edinburgh. There are a couple of tickets left for Dublin and also Cardiff, where we'll have Andy Powell as our special guest.
Oh no.
Oh yes.
So just get on to eventbrite.co.uk for more details. And as always, thanks to Guinness for their help.
Mate, Andy Rowe, your voice has gone weird.
Mate, you're reading clearer. What is it? Who are you?
It's a big week, isn't it? So he's on holiday.
Who are you then?
I am Tim Groves.
A.K.A.?
Producer Tim.
Here he is, loving it. Absolutely loving it. He's got his Stone Island jumper on that has been washed 500 times and you've got some new wheels. What are they?
Adiwots.
They're Adibas. They ain't Adidas. They're Adibas. Look at the state of them.
They've only got 2.5 stripes, those ones.
They're about half the size of yours, Jim.
How excited are you, though, to be in Andy Rowe's chair?
I'm not excited, no. It's just professional.
Well, you've had the knives out for him for a few weeks, haven't you? Like, get rid of him. He's got to go on holiday.
And talking of knives, Goody, you must be absolutely fucked. Are you exhausted or what?
I had a great week last week. It's very nice. I went to Verbier. I was asked by a company who shall remain nameless to go on their leadership conference and speak to all their senior management, do a lunch for them, talk about leadership
and culture.
Yes, a little bit about culture.
What a man.
And then I had
to do it.
I had a three-day skiing off the back of it as well and did an after-dinner speech for them in one of the evenings. So I had a great week. I've got to have a big shout out, actually. I got my skis and I text my surgeon, Sam Church. And I said, listen, I'm going skiing. Will the knee hold up? He's like, well, I've seen how much weight you put on, Goody. Probably not. I've done my best, is what he said. And then just as I texted him to say the knee's all good, I stacked it down the mountain. I thought my knee was going to fall off again. So, yeah, life is good, James.
Mate, I know it's very good in your world. And have you lost any weight under the stress? No pun intended.
Mate, I'll be very honest, James. There's absolutely no stress in my life over the last week at all.
So you've had no stress, you've not felt stressed trying to rush them tweets out at how you did.
What tweets? I'm just reporting on facts, as I've always said.
Report a Goody, that's what it is.
Well, you know, we've been on this podcast, this is series four, isn't it? And I might have been talking about the salary cap being broken for all 4 years. And funnily enough, it's, you know, the chickens come home to roost, as they say, James.
Well, you do seem to be the go-to guy now. You were at Allianz Park yesterday, weren't you? Who was that with?
Yes, Sky Sports asked me to go to Allianz Park.
After the news broke?
Yeah, Sunday morning.
You posted a video. Mate, you look very red. That's stress.
That was from skiing.
Oh, yeah, skiing. Yeah. But you're not red today, but you look very stressed when you were there.
You go into an environment where there's a lot of bad feeling around because they've cheated. And, you know, I'm just reporting on what's out there. And, you know,
goading.
If people want, well, you call it goading, but technically I call it work in the media, because if you're paid to go and do something and give your opinion, I'm going to go and give my opinion. I'm not going to go and give the opinion that Saracens fans want to think about their club. I'm going to go and give my honest opinion. And I think we can all be fairly in agreement here that I've just been honest of what I think.
The thing around it is, and we know that the Saracens supporters and people who support Saracens are very minimal compared to the masses.
They got no fans.
When it comes on to the subject that we're talking about, I think the issue with you over the weekend was the relentlessness and the goading, and you seem to take joy out of the tweets. So, we spoke on Friday, right? Knowing that Sarries were going to get relegated.
Yep.
And there'd been a series of tweets and stuff that had gone out by yourself in the lead up to that. And we were chatting about it, weren't we? And I said, I do things differently. You do things your way. And a lot of your points were valid. You speak the truth. You say what a lot of people are thinking. And you say the uncomfortable thing sometimes, I think. But as the weekend's progressed even further, I think it's the goading that has probably pissed people off. And I say people, naturally people at Saracens. So the players, if they've read it, Brendan Venter, we can get onto your Twitter spat of how we now live our life. Edward Griffiths, the comments around him. And I just think that's what's annoyed people. Not the fact that Sarries have broke the salary cap, because they have.
So who's getting annoyed? If you go back through my tweets, now people are like, oh, you're goading, you're enjoying this.
So are you enjoying it or not?
So let's go back.
Are you enjoying it?
I'm reporting on what I've spoken about for 4 years.
Are you enjoying it or not?
Do I enjoy that Saracens have brought the game into complete disrepute and cheated for years? No. But do I think there's a place for honesty now, which, just to let all our listeners know, is one of their values that they write on their, you know, on their charter, and it's all on around the stadium. Here's what people forget. So I've spoken about Saracens and the stuff they've won, how they've played, how they've done it. And I think I've been very, very fair in celebrating how good they've been at times. But with that, when you've cheated, I've got to be honest and give my honest opinion of that as well. So people are thinking that I'm enjoying this. And you're going back through Twitter, and I go back through my tweets. All right, there's a bit of a jokey one. Thoughts with Jim Hamilton right now? No, you know, it could be about anything, but... That's the banter that
could be about anything.
That's the banter that we've had on here for years.
Mate, there's nothing. There's nothing else that happened in my life, really.
So then you're going back to, you know, I said to Brent, my first tweet to Brendan Venter, while I appreciate your loyalty, you have to be honest with yourself. Culture is so much easier to create when the players are so well looked after financially. Where's the gloating here?
Yeah, but you know, there's.
You can read into things how you want. So
yeah, but it's more the relentless tweets that are coming through, and obviously I don't know.
No, like, my relentless tweets to Brendan, because he comes at me and says I'm abusing people. I ain't abused anyone. I'm talking facts. I get there's a lot of pain around the club at the minute and Saracens fans, but like Rob Baxter said a few weeks ago, don't be mad at the people talking about it. Be mad at the people that don't. I spoke to a very, very influential Saracens fan yesterday who is very good friends with Nigel Ray.
Yeah,
he has supported the club for years and years and years. He's a wonderful man that does a lot of other work, similar to Nigel Ray. And I said to him, I spoke to him before, I said, mate, how do you feel? He goes, I'm hurt. I said, why are you hurt? He said, I'm hurt because I've been lied to. I've supported this club and I've been lied to about a lot of things by a lot of people. So for some reason, people vent their anger and frustration in these situations. I think I've been pretty fair. And because it's come to the fore, because I've spoken about it so much, because I'm in the game, I'm in the media, I know a lot of agents, I know a lot of the owners and all this stuff. I've been around the game for 20 years, Jim. And people are like, oh, you're speculating. I ain't speculating. I've been talking about this for donkey's years. So when it all comes out, of course I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah, but there's also an element of, it's come out, ha-ha, I knew.
Where have I ever said, ha-ha, I know?
But that's how it's coming
across. We warn each other up on the podcast here. You give me banter about Wasps and we were shit at the weekend, lost 27-0 at home to Bordeaux. So we'll get to that bit.
Mate, I can't say I saw it.
Richard Wigglesworth comes on here last week laughing about the one bed flat in Luton.
Yeah.
It's just banter. But actually, when I'm reporting and doing my job properly that I'm paid to do, to give my opinion, which is what the media is, people fucking lose their shit.
No, I just think you've gone a little bit further in terms of, ha-ha, I've known all along, because you have known. No, no, no.
When have I ever said, ha-ha, I've known?
But as your friend and someone who works with you, that's how it seems. And I said that on the phone when we spoke about it.
You got a vested interest in it though, Jim.
Yeah, but I'm also frustrated over the recent weeks, and we can come on to talk about how I feel about it. I'm the same as the guy that you spoke to. I think I know who it is. I'm gutted by it all because I'm being fed information from the club as this is going on, as a person in the media. Influential is not the bloody word I was thinking, and nor that I know that you weren't thinking. I'm hearing terminology used like administrative errors. So I'm going based on what I'm being told.
Mm.
So, and I'm saying it publicly to the millions of people out there. And then all this comes out. It's like egg on my face as well. So there's a part of me that I'm disappointed by it all. Mm. But the other part of me is, it's like... The analogy is probably wrong because it goes deeper with your family and friends. But if someone in your family or your friends fucks up, you're going to support them.
Of course you are.
And that's where my stance is on it. Nigel Ray is a good bloke.
Mm.
Now, has he done good business? Clearly not. Look at the state of it now. But when we're talking in the weeks leading up, you're privy to some of the information. I'm not. I don't know anything. All I know is the information that I'm being fed from people within the club saying the errors that have occurred are... errors of administration.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And that's the point with Saracens from when the news first broke about the fine and all the words, everything that the club's come out and said. And this is why there's so much bad feeling about it, because they said it was an administrative error. They're now complying with the salary cap this year. And it's all lies. Everything has been lies. But now, the way it looks, it's all been lies.
So we should say, for anyone tuning in wanting to hear about the Champions Cup, we will be talking about the action on the pitch later. But this story is... Jim, now the biggest story ever to have hit the English club game.
Is it worse than Bloodgate? Well, it is now.
Easily.
Is it, people are saying, oh, you know, it's the same as Lance Armstrong. I think doping, and I heard Ugo say, and I'll text Ugo about it, I ain't bothered. It is financial doping. What does that mean? Doping and taking drugs and injecting yourself and doing that as an individual athlete, even if you did it as a team athlete, is very different to what we have seen here. This is above the players and arguably above the coaches. Very different. You cannot compare taking drugs and doping, proper doping, to what we've seen here. Yes, this is the worst thing to happen in rugby in terms of the best team of this generation being relegated. Do not compare it. Maybe, do not compare it to taking drugs.
Maybe people are getting confused because at Saracens there's been loads of South Africans involved, right? And in South Africa, as we know, drinking is called doping.
Oh.
So maybe there's that doping. Yeah. Oh, I'm having a dope,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah.
I think financial doping is an established phrase that maybe you have a problem with, and maybe rightly so.
You blow my mind. So it is a phrase.
But it does mean when, you know, an owner just invests massive amounts of money to kind of buy success, which the point is that's what some people think has happened.
And so, we also don't, you know, you can still pigeonhole these co-investments. It's a lot worse than that.
Well, it must be.
It is a lot. It is. I mean, as much as people want to say it's the generosity of Nigel and it's Mac Van Prop, whatever it is, it's worse than that. Let's just be clear on this.
But there's also a part of me, it's not necessarily that. So we knew it was coming. So there's an emotional element around that. And my experience at Saracens was brilliant in terms of what I'm doing now. Was off the back of doing that, winning Champions Cups. Are they important? Well, not really, but I loved it.
Mm.
And I loved the experiences that went with that. And then the only question that I have is, well, I know the answer to the question. My time at Saracens was enhanced because we won things. I've been in teams before, mentioned it before, where you're losing and the culture's crap because you're losing.
Mm.
When you're winning and you're winning everything, the culture's great. Are the titles that we won tarnished? 100%.
Mm.
Now, and that's where a few weeks ago when we spoke about it, based on the information that I had, and this is where, right, this is where it really needs to happen, not just for me, but for the players, the supporters and rugby, because there's clearly more than administration errors. Saracens could have kept challenging what was happening and they could have said, open the books, we can show you that the only problem here is co-investments with the players, which I don't have a problem with, houses with Nigel Ray and players, which I don't have a problem with. I've said it before, I don't have a problem with them things.
Mm.
But if there's other stuff that is on top of them things, which there must be because they've not opened the books, then that's where the problem is. And that's where the sanctions that have now been brought, which they've chose, is to be relegated.
But Jim, you say you haven't got a problem with those co-investments, but they have been found by the auditors that they are breaching the salary cap.
That's the big thing. And it's all right having an opinion, and I don't have a problem with any of those co-investments if they were within the salary cap. So, you know,
is there more than the co-investments?
I think what Saracens are saying is, here's their salary, here's their co-investments, and we don't know what else there is, because all Saracens had to do, and the reason this is going to rumble on, and the reason there's huge bad feeling and, you know, people pretty annoyed around the world on this, Saracens had the opportunity to come clean. And it took Tony Rowe talking on the radio to say Saracens, that there was a number of things that they were asked to comply with for this year. One was to be under the salary cap for this year. Two was for Nigel Ray to step down. Three was to hand back two of the trophies that they've won, where they were comfortably around $1.5 million plus over the salary cap.
What years were they?
I think maybe 17 and 18. Two of the three.
Oh, gosh. So you're saying my legacy is Scotland. That's my legacy. What an absolute disgrace.
They had to have a new independent chairman, which they have done, and they had to open the books for a forensic audit. Now, you know, if Saracens would have opened their books and said, here you go, and then said, actually, you know what? We have messed up. There's this, 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 and this. We'll take our punishment. But no, they've said, actually, we're going to take relegation and we're still going to keep it behind closed doors and not let anyone know how bad it's been. So, of course, that's going to infuriate people more and create more questions. And let's just be clear about something. So they're not in the salary cap this year. They've been found guilty for the last 3 years. And then you go back to the 2 years previous to that, Saracens were supposedly one of the two clubs that paid an undisclosed fine and it got brushed under the carpet and it was a line in the sand saying, from now on, no one breaks the salary cap. So minimum, they've been doing it for 6 years. And when you're living by and you talk about all this brotherhood and you talk about all the values, if you ain't living by them but you're preaching them, you're going to get caught up on it.
But the players,
it's like me. Imagine me preaching about just eating salad every day. It ain't fucking happening.
You're a liar.
Exactly. But
the players are living by them. And that's the saddest thing in this whole scenario. As an experienced player towards the end, you look around the changing rooms and you look at quality upon quality. But genuinely, when you're in there, you don't think about it. I have no idea what other players get paid.
I was going to ask you that, Jim, because you have been there and there is a lot of sympathy for the players out there at the moment. But there are also a lot of people saying they must have known. They must be implicated in some way. I know we don't know what other players are getting paid, but just a general feeling that Mark McCall as well, a lot of sympathy with him, but he must have some indication of what's going on.
Well, McCall is the one, and rightly, he's now taken himself away from that side of things and said that he's concentrating on what goes on the field, because I think you have to do that. I think any director of rugby knows what players are getting paid, knows what players are getting worth. I had this chat with Kelly Brown. We were speaking about it, and he has no idea. And I said, like, what do you think he's on? What do you think he's on? I was trying to work out actually how far over the cap are they. Kelly had no idea, which I found, and he genuinely didn't, which I found really surprising. And then we started talking about when we were there, what players were on. But I think when we were there in 2016, 2017, that's when there was an explosion of salary. And you could argue that salaries were that team where it started. So the changing point for me is when we're there during 16, 2017, looking at the quality of players in the changing room that had all come through the academy. So we're thinking, right, they're maybe not going to get paid what's market rate until there's wind of George Ford getting 600 grand at Leicester, Biggar's getting 750. So I think, you know, Farrell's going to knock on the door. Well, what am I getting? Billy Vunipola is now the best number eight in the world. Well, I want to be paid like the best number eight in the world, Mako Vunipola. And then you start to wonder, when you're in it, you don't look around the changing rooms. You have no idea.
I completely know what you're saying there, but there's a few things that need to be cleared up, because there's a perception and there's a reality. So perception is that all these boys have come through the academy. Billy Vunipola didn't come through the academy, no. Nor did Mako Vunipola. No.
But they came to the club as young blokes. So Billy came from Wasps and he wouldn't have been paid a lot of money to be at Sarries from
but,
that age.
You know, they haven't produced all these players themselves. So let's take someone like Jamie George, for example, who's a great bloke, wonderful player. His form has gone through the roof. Who did he learn from?
John Schmidt.
And Scout Brits, right? So they've been breaking the salary cap for years, which has enabled someone like Jamie George to play with two of the best hookers and learn off two of the best hookers to ever play the game. Clubs can't afford to do that, other clubs, and stick within the salary cap. So this is the argument. Yes, they've provided all these players to England and the World Cup final and all this stuff, which, you know, we've all celebrated. So yes, they've developed them, and yes, they've improved, and yes, they're now fully-fledged England's nationals and world-class players. They've been allowed to do that because they've been cheating on the salary cap for years.
And this is the thing, going back to my thoughts a few weeks ago, I thought cheat was a strong word. Manipulated was what I would have said. Manipulated the salary cap because they found a loophole.
And I'm right now?
Well, they've cheated.
There we go.
So I'm saying, because they've said it themselves. Mm. So I can only go based on that. You know, yeah. I don't know how you are, but you're privy to a lot of information that's around that, you know. And I'm not one to throw carrots, but I'm looking at it now.
Okay, throw me some chocolate, I'll tell you.
I don't want to be this guy.
Be the guy.
Well, I'm going to ask you, because you seem to know a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So there must be other clubs out there that are manipulating / cheating the salary cap because of what Saracens have done, or they've heard whispers about that.
Generally, I don't know of anyone. There has been a couple of administrative errors. We've seen Wasps get done for 20, 30 grand or whatever. Quinns, I think, got done as well. And don't, you know, whether that's official or not.
They were both official, yeah.
But they were clear administrative errors because they've registered a player or something that's come around that they've just pushed them over the cap. You know, there's rumours of other clubs that are bending the rules. Now, here's one thing. I'm not privy to any information on any other club at the minute of breaking the salary cap. What I do hope...
But my God, when we do, we will hear it.
And this is the thing. And what I do hope is that Saracens have taken offence to, and you did yourself a little bit, for Laura Lambert, the way she investigated it. Now, what you hope is that someone is investigating every club to that detail. And if it's found out they're cheating, then things happen. Now, there's one surefire thing that finally Premiership Rugby, and I said it, I did a column for it on Rugby Pass months and months ago about the salary cap, saying it's either going to be managed, it's either going to be stuck to, and the punishments that are in the salary cap regulations are handed out properly, or what's the point of having it? Now, finally, Premiership Rugby are doing something where they're saying, we're taking a strong stance on it. Darren Charles, the new CEO, has been very vociferous in the press talking about it and saying, we ain't here to mess around. You know, this is what's happened. These are ramifications. And moving forward, we'll be equally as strong because it's about fair competition. It's about keeping the game viable. And it's about the fact that we want professional rugby to be here in 20 years. And part of that, as we've talked about, is these clubs are losing a hell of a lot of money. If you get rid of the salary cap, clubs will go by the wayside. So you need some stability.
But you mentioned a couple of things there, Goody, which is interesting. You say it goes back 6 years. And you also said, finally, they're doing something about it. They have had some criticism, Premiership Rugby, but have they had enough? Because if this has been going on for that long, why has nothing been done until recently?
Exactly. That, you know, we live in the here and now, don't we? There have been things going on in the past, and for some reason it was kept undisclosed, but there was two clubs that reportedly broke the salary cap, and a lot of other clubs came out and said, it wasn't us. And I believe every club in the Premiership came out at the time and said, it wasn't us, except for Saracens, except for Bath, and except for Leicester Tigers. So who knows what's the truth anymore with clubs saying things about the salary cap. But what they haven't done, Premiership Rugby, is I don't think there's been enough governance on it for until now, in reality. And that's where we sit, you know. And that's probably why Saracens, and I'm absolutely not defending Saracens at all, but it's probably why Saracens have got deeper and deeper and deeper into it, because they're like, well, actually, we broke it before. Nothing's really happened, so we'll just keep doing it because they ain't going to do anything. We're Saracens. And I don't mean that as them being arrogant about it. There's actually been nothing done until November the 5th or 4th or whenever it was when the first foreign came that said, shit, actually, they're serious. So Premiership Rugby have let this escalate. There is some responsibility laid at their door because you've got these regulations and they've not stuck to them themselves as the governing body. And then obviously clubs have found loopholes. I'll tell you one thing now, though. From now on, you'll be damn sure that no one will be trying to find any more loopholes.
Is it in the PRL's, is it in rugby's interest for them to find anyone else? Or do you think that's it? Do you think scaremongered them?
Hopefully it's scaremongered everyone to go, that's it, we can't do anything now, we just stick to this. And I know certain clubs do that. Certain clubs wouldn't even dream of going over the salary cap. A, because they don't want to spend more than it, and I've spoken about that before. B, purely because they believe in the salary cap and what it is.
Rules is rules, as the famous right. Michael Holford said.
Michael Holford said that. But I also hope that if other clubs have been doing it, that they get fully found out as well.
But that's what I mean. Is that a good thing for rugby? Well, and imagine there's another two teams.
Right? Rugby's on our knees. We're on our knees right now, credibility.
I think we're on our arse, mate. With a pile hanging out as well at that side.
If it's your piles, we're fucked.
My God, there's three of them, man.
That was going to be my next question. It is embarrassing. There's no doubt about it. It's embarrassing. And the league comes out of it almost as bad as Saracens, doesn't it? We look, as a league, the Premiership, everyone who's involved in it, do they not look amateurish?
Well, the next place you look, because now Saracens are going to be looking down their bus on the way to Cornish Pirates. Apologies, Cornish Pirates.
That tweet didn't age well, did it?
I've been abused by the three Cornish Pirate fans down there as well. So again, mine was done in tongue in cheek. This is the thing. I'm just taking the mic. The next place you're going to look is what Premiership Rugby have done about it and how it reflects on the game. And you read all the different media outlets and listen. This is the sad thing about it, is because I've been a guy that, to reiterate the point, has been saying it's not that bad.
Well, speaking of the salary cap and Saracens, we can speak to a man that's more at the heart of it than us. Brendan Fenter joins us. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks.
Brendan, great to have you on, mate. We were unsure whether you were going to come on. I know there's been a Twitter spat, which is almost unbelievable from probably where you come from in recent years with the wisdom, but that's the way that life is. I've got one big question that I need to ask first before we get into it.
Yes.
My turnover in 2016 against Exeter in the Premiership Finals, does that still stand or not? Does that still stand?
Tim, you do realise you are a legend at the club. So, I mean, whatever you did, it just gets bigger and bigger. So it will stand, yeah.
Thanks very much. Look, we need to get into it because I think naturally you've been very vocal about the whole situation around this before, obviously more so now. You're big on pushing out that the culture at Saracens is still there, and that's been the driving force behind the situation and the championships and everything that I was involved in as well. I think the other argument to that, which, as we know, Goody has been very vocal about, is that the culture is stemmed from the success, which has stemmed from, which we know now, Saracens breaking the salary cap. Just give us an overview. And again, there's stuff in the media. We've heard you. We've seen it on Twitter. But an overview now. You've had a couple of days to digest it. You've calmed down from the abuse that Goody's given you on social media.
I don't care for that, using that word.
I know. I show it's slander.
Yeah, I've been mean to Goody as well. So no worries there.
That's okay.
Jim, look, I quite like to debate or argue or call whatever you want factually. You know, because so much of what we do and say is emotional and what I call anecdotal. So there aren't facts. It's like a case study of one. The nice thing with Saracens is we've actually got a brilliant case study of environments because Nigel has been involved for 25 years. So you could argue for the first 15, Nigel had loads of money. Nigel spent a lot of the money on the club and absolutely nothing came from it. So I'll give you a good example. In 2002, 2003, Saracens team, which when they recruited Goody, they had a brilliant team. Cristiano Califano, they had Richard Hill, Abdul Benazi, they had Kieran Bracken, they had Goody, they had Tim Horan, which I think I played against him, must have been the best 12 in the world ever. They had Thomas Castagnier. There was a superstar team for that period, and they came eighth. I mean, they recruited amazing coaches. Eddie was Jones was at the club. He was a really good coach, and literally nothing happened. And then this current group of coaches joined in, I think, 2009 and put this run together. So there's actually no debate that it cannot be the money, because the money was there for 15 years. So what is it that is different? It's this group of players and these coaches that grew this environment together. And a lot of people came in and went out. You take a guy like John Smith, who is very, very, very experienced in cultures and playing in different places. And John came and was amazed at the way Saracens did things. And you came and you left. There's nobody that comes and goes and says, this is a horrible place. And that was actually my debate with Goody. I was saying, you are actually just wrong about it. The success of Saracens really wasn't the money. The fact that we could keep everybody together, there I agree with Goody. That is why we ended up being amazing for 10 years. Because all the studies tell us, when I started the project 10 years ago, we looked at a lot of different stuff. And we mainly looked at Leicester and Wasps, because they were the two successful places. And we say, how can we do what they did? And we said, Wasps had a brilliant defensive system. And we said, if we don't have a great defense, we won't be successful. I said, Leicester, we looked at Leicester. They had an amazing pack. You went to Leicester, you struggled. Their pack was strong. But then we looked at both teams and we said, the irony is there were more than 15 players that had played more than 100 games for the club. And that became our goal. How do we keep these people together? And you are right. When the success came, Nigel kept stepping in. So first, these academy kids were 30 grand. Then they were 70 grand. Then they were 100. Then they were 150. And then they became British Lions. And they were 450 or 400 or whatever they are. And that is where Nigel's money bailed us out, that we could sustain the success over such a long period. So it's a combination of stuff. But without a doubt, it was first culture, first environment, first success, and then money.
I understand what you're saying there, Brenda, but you've accused me of saying that the results of winning everything is money. But what I haven't questioned the culture at all. What I've said is culture is so much easier when players are paid way more than they'd get at any other club, which becomes a cycle of winning and having an amazing squad. Take John Schmidt, who you mentioned, a good friend of mine. Played with him at the Sharks, looked after me very well, lovely bloke. And I played in a great environment and a great culture with him at the Sharks. But you talk about Jamie George now, who has come through the academy. He's learnt off the best hooker in the world at the time in John Schmidt. He's also learnt off
Sculler,
probably the second best hooker at the time in Scout Brits. And yep. Now he's an English international, British line, and probably one of the best hookers in the world at the minute. So other clubs haven't been able to have that luxury of having two world stars for their academy guy to learn off and supposedly still being in the salary cap. Now, your values as a club, your cultural values, you talk about honesty, discipline, work rate, and humility. I don't see any honesty in what's gone on in terms of paying players.
Okay, it's a valid point you've got. But you must remember, our problem wasn't there from the start of the 10 years. So we were easily within that. So what you're arguing now is we spent the money in the olden days, and that's why Jamie and them could benefit from it. But we weren't. John and Sculler wasn't the problem. That's not where the money was spent. The money was spent when the youngsters became superstars. That's when we broke the cap.
Oh, Brendan, you've broken it for the last 6 years.
Who told you that? Factually, I have no knowledge of any of that. So I have only knowledge of the last 3 years and this year doesn't really count.
Well, of course
you
it does.
Understand why?
Of course it does, because you're over
so
the
side. Why would you say it doesn't count? But what would be the logic behind it? They debated and they had a legal case that they were under that whatever they did was fine. They lost the case. It was impossible to then be under the cap, because when you lost the case and they tell you that in November, the season is 2 months on, Goody. That's just logic. You can't actually debate that. You see, your argument is still not a good argument, because Jamie was at the club as a 20-year-old. What you're trying to say is that we've always overpaid. In your time, they overpaid as well. But there was no culture. There was no academy kids that came through. There was nothing like that, Goody. So what would your argument to that be?
I'm not disputing the culture is good there. What I'm saying is
the first 15 years. Why did that same argument you've just now applied, why did it not work in the first 15 years? Why did nobody come through? Why did nobody learn from Tim Horan? Why did nobody learn from Thomas Castagnier?
Well, they're probably errors of judgment in terms of the coaches that were in charge and the players that he signed, whether you've overpaid them or not.
So that's a valid point. In other words, something else changed 10 years ago.
Brendan, I'm not disputing the coaches or the culture. All I'm saying is you live by your values and honesty is one of them, and you've broken the salary cap. And that's all I've said. And culture is easier when you're paying players a lot more and everyone's happy. They're getting well looked after off the field. Their families are well looked after. Every player in the Premiership would love to go and play for Saracens for those reasons. Have I not said that on the podcast
yet? No, you have, yeah.
And I would have loved to have been involved in an environment like that where you paid what you think is fair, because sometimes as a player you don't get that at other clubs. Your family's well looked after. You go on the trips and you've got a band of brothers there that are all pulling in the same direction because they're very happy.
Brendan, I just want to ask a question as well. I think that this is what a guy that's been on the inside, and you know, it's been a tough few weeks for everyone. I think it's been a tough few weeks for everyone now with what's happened with the relegation. And I mean that with rugby fans, you know, even people that are goading other clubs, it is a little bit of a mess. But when the big question is the books haven't been opened, so there was a decision for the books to be open or take relegation. So I say Saracens have taken the relegation off the side of that. I think one of the things for me is I can deal with the administration and the co-investments and Nigel going into properties with the guys and the expense of London properties. But the thing that it seems from my point of view, which I'm gutted about, that it seems bigger than that. Am I right in thinking that or not? Because I think that this is what the masses are now is, because I don't think Premiership Rugby will tell us what's happened. I don't think they will give us the facts. And I know that you're probably not going to give us all the facts, but is it bigger than what we think?
I don't have all those facts. No. So I don't have all those facts, but I'll give you the facts that I have. And that it is actually the amounts involved is actually much smaller than the 2 million thrown around. I asked them about 8 weeks ago, what are we over? When the thing broke, I was like, oh, this is not ideal. How much are we over? And like the next week, how much? So nobody could tell me. So that was the first thing. Nobody knew.
Is that from Saracens, nobody knew, or from Premiership Rugby?
Yes, from Saracens. No. Premiership Rugby said they're not going to disclose it. These are the fines. My first question was like Jim's question, but how bad is it? And nobody could tell us. And then I kind of realized that actually nobody knew. And this is why my argument yesterday was, I know you guys, a lot of people think Nigel is a devil incarnate and, you know, he's this unbelievable, dishonest person. It's the absolute opposite. Nigel's kindness is what led to this whole problem. And there wasn't even a proper book kept about what was happening, because every time that a player needed to be kept, the player would go to Nigel personally and Nigel would broker a deal with him. And Nigel would always broker a deal around the joint investments thing. So to answer your first question, Jim, how bad is the other stuff? Edward gave us, for me, he sent me, because Edward's a friend of mine, and I said, tell me what the whole extent. Edward went into the whole thing, 100%. And when Edward sent me the numbers, I was actually pleasantly surprised. I said, is this all? So I said, because we almost got within the salary cap this year, legally, with the three injuries we had this year.
I hear very differently, but I understand your point of view.
No, but I'll tell you, this is factually. So the reason they backed out of the thing and accepted the relegation is because then certain players would have to leave the club now, and that would have been wrong.
So you think that they've done what they've done, Brendan, to protect the values of the club because they didn't want to dismiss people now?
Well, that is exactly what happened. We had two choices. We could go and cut now and people have to be sacrificed, and even the players would have to offer the players to take a pay cut. So there was a worked out plan to be able to do that, and the thought process was, but that's not what we are about. We're just not going to do it like that, and then let's accept relegation.
So, Brendan, just going back to the here and now, you mentioned
what other people have been saying about Nigel Ray. I think in fairness to Goody and Jim, they've both paid tribute to what a genuine nice bloke he is and the charity work he does and everything else. And I can only echo that from my experiences as well. But do you accept that he's made mistakes?
Absolutely.
Is your point that Premiership rugby have made more mistakes?
No, not really. Look, I believe the salary cap is a good thing. That's the irony. Rules are there that we have to abide by them. And that's the way the world works. The world works with rules. So contrary to popular belief, I don't actually think it's a bad thing. And the playing field has to be equal. Otherwise, you'll get Man City and Chelsea and Man U just running away with the thing. And there's four teams competing and 16 others not. So that's the irony. There were little things that I couldn't understand when I looked from the outside. The one was there was a perception that Nigel was a cheat and dishonest. And honestly, that's not that. He made mistakes, but there were a lot of those mistakes were made with the understanding that legally, the legal fees were something like £3 million in the thing. So somebody had to give you that advice that these things are legit. That's the first thing.
You want to ask for your money back.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I think that for me was the thing. And then the thing that I couldn't understand is if you tell people 6 weeks into a season that you now are guilty, remember all the planning up to then was done with the idea that you've won the case. Your lawyers have told you, then they say you're guilty. Okay, now you go, okay, that's a problem. And now I want you to rectify this year as well. And I go, but remember, our planning was done with the idea that we're not guilty. So to then ask, and this is why I stepped in and I looked at the thing and I said, these two things are not fair. That's why I'm so outspoken about the thing. And it's hard to debate to say, no, of course that's fair. And I'm going, but how does that work? How do you fix a problem in the middle of a season and say to three or four or five or six or seven players, we were very lucky because there were a couple of players, high-profile, expensive players that got injured. So we could actually get close. But in reality, we shouldn't have even been close. And that's where I stepped in and why I've been so outspoken. And that's almost the end of the frustration now because what's done is done. Yeah. And Saracens are regulated. Now we need to go forward.
I agree with that. I think the one bugbear for a lot of people will be, though, when it boils down to the fact that you did have a choice of opening your books or taking relegation, with the values that you live by, why can't Saracens have just said, well, here you go, this is what's happened, and put it all out there? Instead, it still looks like, you know, you want to keep everything under wraps because you've been found guilty, and you're more happy to take relegation than just pure honesty and openness.
To be brutally honest with you, the reason they didn't do the appeal is because legally the appeal would never – it's not a factual appeal. The appeal is whether the PRL have got the rights to make a decision like this, which they have. So if you're part of the PRL, they've got that right. So that's why it would work. And it's the same point, yeah, Goody. There was always going to be relegation. That's what was needed because when they could see Saracens, the 35 points was not going to do the thing, was Leicester and London Irish are just adamant. They can't afford to get relegated, and it's going to be. And I think Saracens, and I don't have so much inside info. A lot of what I do is from the outside. I've got friends which I ask in the club, but I'm not right in the inner circle making the decisions. But they realized the only thing that was going to satisfy this is relegation because we need to move forward now. There needs to be clarity. We can't struggle like that. We need to prepare a squad for the championship. We need to keep the squad together and we need to move forward and we need to come back into the premiership with a very strong squad within the cap, whiter than white, following every rule 100%. That's the vision of the club.
Brendan, just before Jim asks you a question, I think there's one key point there on the transparency. Obviously, Saracens aren't going to open their books and you've explained sort of why they won't do that. But as a league, and as a product, Premiership Rugby, this is quite embarrassing. Do you think they need to come out and publish that report or give us more information so that the credibility of the league can be reestablished?
Look, I must admit, 3 months ago, that is exactly what I would ask for. At the moment, I'm not even thinking about what happened, what should happen. I'm thinking what's done is done. Now it is what it is. Next job. How can Saracens get back to where they were? And if you imagine, life is so short. A year is a year is nothing in one's life. So my thought process is not at all anymore blaming and picking and saying what PRL should have done, or you know, or what Tony Rose should. My thing is, can we get our team together and be competitive again? Imagine the sports story of being relegated and coming back and being competitive again. How amazing that would be.
Yeah, it'd be great. And one of the questions then, you're talking about keeping the squad together. So there's obviously a lot of mixed noises. You're saying that a lot of the squad are going to be kept together. Mark McCall said that the squad is going to be broken up. Can you talk about which, you know, who's right, who's wrong here?
Mark would not have meant it like that at all. Mark is the main architect of keeping our squad together. And Mark's got a brilliant plan. We will definitely keep our squad together. Definitely. There'll be people who are retiring, but we've got some amazing young players coming through who we will make sure stay. And I know Smalley will make sure that our senior players stay. I'm completely convinced that we will keep our squad together. 100%.
Brendan, cheers for coming on. I know it's been a shit week, a week that's probably had to happen in hindsight and looking at it now. I wouldn't say friends clear the air, Goody, happy? Good on for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Brendan. Appreciate it. We're obviously going to disagree on a lot of things, and you know, you can only hope that now there is a line in the sand and there's clarity of what's going to happen, that Saracens do, as you say, stick to the salary cap and away to the mic moving forward.
Okay, Goody. Okay, Jim, it's nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Brendan. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Okay. Thanks, Brendan. Bye.
Cheers, Brendan.
Good lad.
Good lad.
Good lad for coming on.
But why is he not a good lad?
I'm not saying he's not a good lad.
Well, you didn't say he was.
I say he's a good lad for coming on.
But this is the thing, let me just say, right? So this is the where life is at the minute, right? And this is what drives me mad.
The kids.
That as well. I've not even thought about the kids this weekend. It's all been all ruggers. This is probably goes back to my initial point is people chastise you. What a word. Is that the word that you use?
Yeah, I've used that.
Okay, that's where I got it from. Chastise you for having your opinion. Yeah. It's the way that you go about it. But you're chastising Brendan, not just you, I mean people like you, not who look like you, the masses against Saracens. Brendan's got his views, he's got his opinions on it, he's got his experience, and you can hear how passionate he is about
it.
Whether or not that's right or wrong, he's allowed them opinions.
Of course he is.
As you are. Good lad?
I don't know, Brendan.
I can tell you
He's a good lad for coming on.
He's a lovely human being.
Yeah, but there's loads of things in what he said there that are just contradicting himself.
Where?
So he said Nigel Ray, that yeah, players used to go in there and academy players, their value's gone up and they'll do a deal with that and there's no black book of what it is. Nigel Ray's one of the most successful businessmen in this country and he ain't got a black book about who's he invested who with. He hasn't got it written down somewhere or he's in knowledge of someone that knows who he's got investments with here. I don't believe that for one minute.
And that shouldn't be a throwaway comment what he said. What he's getting at is Nigel has been too generous for his own good. It's as simple as that, Goody. No other owner, not just with money. Like, you all know. Mate, you've employed Pablo, you've got nannies galore, you've got cleaners, have you got a driver? Do you get your car valeted?
Of course I do.
Mate, everything. When you've got money, you can do whatever. And I think what his demise has now been, we've seen, is too generous. And he's
An excuse, Jim.
I'm not making an excuse for it.
I agree, and I've said Nigel's a great bloke who's been very generous, not only to Saracens, but to the game of rugby. It's not an excuse for what's gone on, and you can't just brush over things and go, well, yeah, you know, Nigel's generosity is what's got Saracens into this trouble. I don't believe it for 1 minute, but ultimately the club have cheated, and that's the bottom line. And when you're not willing to open your books and you'd rather take relegation and you then say, we want to take relegation so we keep our squad together. Again, we ain't going to move on from this until, you know, there's no honest, complete 100% transparency and honesty coming out of them.
Well, there is probably more to come and we could genuinely probably talk for another 2-3 hours about this, but there was action on the pitch as well and Saracens were pretty good, weren't they, Jim?
I mean, it was a somber atmosphere naturally in the build-up, but you can only talk about what you're seeing out there, and more controversy with a red card to Big Willie, Little Willie Skelton.
It's not controversial, is it? It's a red every day of the week.
Well, controversy in terms of what's happening. So it's just, you know what I'm saying, an avalanche of drama. Well,
Billy breaks his arm in the first 5 minutes and then Big Willie, Little Willie gets ready. But the big thing, and we had him on the pod last week, Richard Wigglesworth, 46 years of age.
Comes on.
And Alex Lewington. Comes on the ding-ling ling. And those two... And the way they play, the way Wiggy controls a game is he's better than anyone at doing that in the Northern Hemisphere, probably the world. and I'm not exaggerating there probably, I don't know, but he's box kicking, and just the way they manage the game, they start off like an absolute steam train, Saracens, 14-0 up, and then, you know, Farrell throws the intercept, Vakatawa, who first half was
how good
up there with the best player in the world. Second half, where were you, mate?
Well, they didn't have any ball, did they, really? No. Well, when they did have a bit of ball, they looked dangerous.
But yeah, so Saracens, credit to them, you know, against all the odds, what they did, but Nigel Owens.
Yeah, again, another tweet. Nigel Owens. So it's another tweet on top of another tweet.
Well, no, but it's just honest.
So which one was it? There was a couple of instances, wasn't there? There was the high ball that went up that arguably was going to be a knock-on.
He took so much time in certain decisions. So he takes a lot of time to check when the kick went through, and they were debating whether Machinot and, I think it was Dupuy Show, had the ball, and did they take it over, and then that was a big call. It was a big call. And, you know, you take your time. But the penalty he's given against Boris Palou for when Elliot Daly's gone up for the kick, knocked it onto, I think it was Bruce Dillon's head, and he's headed it forward 50 yards, and then the other fellas picked it up,
Timo checked it as well, though. You know, as
Timo's had a shocker then.
Yeah.
If you're taking your time on every decision like that because of the atmosphere, the stakes. So Glasgow, he's basically given them a penalty that shouldn't have been a penalty. They then got territory off the back of it. And Nigel's a great bloke, and he got the good last week in the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I'm not, you know, I'm saying that at that level, you're looking at a decision like that with the TMO, with a whole team that you've got completely wrong. And the knock-on effect is Saracens then go get territory, end up getting the penalty to win the game. And I'm not taking anything away from Saracens, but ultimately that decision led to that. Glasgow are out effectively because Saracens won, and in them winning, Nigel's made Nigel and his team have made a massive mistake.
Has he cheated or not?
No.
Well, Saracens got that last place late on Sunday. The first ones to set the tone were Saints. They set the target. They beat Leon away. How impressed were you with them again?
First half, they were bang average. Gone in 17-5 down at half time, staring down the barrel, looking like they're not going to qualify and win. And, you know, Tuasova looked ridiculous for Leon. I'm sat in the studio with Bafes and Lawrence eating a lot of sweets. You get well looked after at BT, don't you, with the sweets? And
of course. No, well, I think it's the opposite. I don't think they're looking after you there.
Okay.
I think that's human cruelty.
But they come out and they, second half, obviously, whatever Chris Boyd and Sam Vestimiel Boginos said at half time, worked a treat. Tiamana Harrison was big in the second half. Furbank, who's been named in the England squad, scored a lovely try, which coincidentally was a move that we used to do at Leicester. When Sam Vesti was a player.
Shows how good he is.
Yeah. And he's brought back, rugby goes around in circles. He's
red
brought it
nuts,
back.
Mate. That's what he's done.
He's got massive red nuts.
Well, they're not massive.
He picks his nose and ginger pubes. But he's a very intelligent coach, is Sam Vesti. And they gave Naira Voro the weekend off because his partner had a child. They put Hutchinson on the bench and started Dingwall, who's now in the England squad. So yeah, it was, you know, they go away to Exeter. And it's interesting, isn't it? Would you, of those away quarterfinals now, which one would you fancy? Because if you're Saracens, you're going to Leinster. And it'd be interesting, is this Saracen squad? You've heard Brendan say the squad's still going to be together. The other thing we didn't speak about, I forgot to mention, was they've got to comply for 2 years with the salary cap under current regulations before they get promoted. So, i.e. this year and next year to come back up. So
that's the bizarre thing for me, is why they've taken relegation now.
But, you know, is that squad still going to be the same? And Saracens will back themselves to go anywhere. You know, Leinster, have they still got a question mark over their head about beating Saracens after the final last year? You know, you're going away to Toulouse, you're Ulster. I'd fancy going to Toulouse if I was a team. I think they're good, but, you know, you look at, you wouldn't fancy Clermont away, would you?
Oh, I don't know. I think
Exeter away, they don't lose money there, do they?
No.
Well, Northampton could have been going to Toulouse if Toulouse had got that try at the end. Does it make a difference? Because obviously now Exeter will get a home country advantage in the semi-final as the second seed. Does that matter if you're Toulouse?
Well, that's only if they beat Northampton.
Of course.
So, why being horrible? it's a massive thing. So first and second seeds, knowing that you're going to play it in your own country, wherever it may be. I don't think they've come out with the stadium yet, have they?
No.
Because it'll also depend on, you know, if Northampton beat Exeter, then I think it will go over to France in Toulouse, won't it?
Yeah.
Or somewhere in France, for as they're the highest seeded team left in, if Toulouse beat Ulster. It's a huge thing. And ultimately, Exeter, who they made a lot of noise. This is the second time they qualified for the knockouts. Big questions over coming into this season over their European form, because they've always underachieved in Europe, haven't they, compared to how good they've been in the Premiership. So, you know, that for them is huge. And then you think, where do they play it? Where would Exeter play a semi if they had a choice? Bristol City, maybe?
I was going to say Ashton Gate.
But then you're taking it to another rugby ground that perhaps you don't want to.
Yeah, but they might not want to stay down that way.
It was always going to be a tough ask anyway for Gloucester in Toulouse, wasn't it? Needing not just to beat them, but to beat them with a big win, really. They were always struggling.
Well, that was the thing that Saracens fans were obviously watching, because if Gloucester would have beaten Toulouse or scored more than scored within 12, or, no, what was it? What was it?
They had to beat them with a bonus point or beat them by within more 12. Than 12.
Yeah. But no, they started off well, didn't they? They got a good try. Lewis Rees-Sammet.
Again.
He went off injured, didn't he, as well? Which doesn't look great.
Foot, ankle. He said he couldn't run on it or something, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, you're hoping it's not too serious.
He's definitely English, isn't he? I'm sure he's English.
You know, Toulouse. I didn't realise Richard Arnold was there, the Australian second row. He had a good game.
Both there now, aren't they?
Yeah, brothers.
Yeah. Could it be there? Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, a comfortable victory in the end against Gloucester. Gloucester have run out of a bit of steam, really, in the last few weeks, I think, it looks like. Cipriani's injured. Lloyd Evans, at 10, the young lad, he's not really had a chance, but I was chatting to Grobler when he came up to coach JJ and the boys at Stowe Rugby Club, and he said, he's a quality player, as you need to look out for him,
Why don't you give him a day off? Grobs, what do you reckon to...
He's got to give back.
One of the ones to miss out, Glasgow did their bit, smashed Sale away, but it wasn't enough. They will badly rue losing to La Rochelle at home, won't they?
Yeah, that's the thing. Look, Glasgow started off the season not great, and then they've built a bit of momentum over Christmas, and then frankly they've been flying, haven't they? A massive draw the week before against Exeter, and like you said, that La Rochelle game, which you thought, having beat them over there, that they would have been able to do that, but it just shows you actually how competitive and how tight, I mean... For me, you're thinking Glasgow are going to go through. That's what you're thinking. And then it all changes for them. But they're a good team now. The worry is with Glasgow, and for Richie Gray's going back there, is it was a big year for them this year to see what, if they could compete in Europe. And now they're not going to get an opportunity. You know, it's Stuart Hogg's gone. Finn Russell's gone. Johnny Gray's gone. David Rennie's going. So they're going to be in transition. So really, this was their big opportunity, I think, in Europe to try and do something. But like you said, you know, that pool was an interesting one with La Rochelle, who, I don't know, were they an outside bet going in to qualify with...
La Rochelle?
Yeah, with...
They got Ron
O'Gara.
Well, you'd have thought so with the squad quality, but then again, European pedigree, they haven't got much of it.
No.
And they get hosed by Exeter in round one, I think it was, at home.
Yeah.
And then you find
Glasgow beat them at their place. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
We've spoken about the other some of the other big games in round six, and Ulster did what they needed to do to make it through to the last eight. And their man of the moment, Billy Burns, joins us now. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on,
Billy, mate. We got a good relationship with the Ulster, with the lads in Northern Ireland. I know Cavey spoke to you with Cavey's Coffee on Patreon.
Yeah,
you can get that. But yeah. I'm not sure you've been on. We've had Freddie on a few times.
Mate, every time I flick on, it's either Cavey or Cooney, mate.
There you go, mate. Wow, we've bigged you up a lot, mate, and rightly so. Tim said man of the moment, but man of the match at the weekend. You said that your brother should have got it. Do you, watching the game back, do you really think that?
Well, it was a weird old game, to be honest. Like, I thought he actually played really well. He kicked the ball a lot, but I was just glad to see him out on the pitch, because he's obviously not been getting loads of game time at the moment. But hey, I'll never turn down a man of the match, that's for sure. But yeah, we're just glad to get the win and obviously get into the quarterfinals, which was the main aim.
How is that going against your brother? You both play very similarly. You look very similar. I don't know whether that's a good thing for him or you. I don't really know.
Oh, mate, that's not fair on Fred.
but how is it? Like, because you clearly take the game seriously, but you do like a bit of a laugh and a joke, and you two are very tight. How is it coming up against your brother?
Yeah, it's strange enough. Like, it's cool for sure. But like, do you know what? It's like when you're setting up for a scrum and you're sort of looking at him and you see him opposite you, it's hard not to have a little bit of a chuckle and have a little bit of banter. But once the game's got going and stuff, it's you kind of forget about it a little bit. There was a couple of times where he got me on the floor on a breakdown and gave me a little bit of an elbow and that. But no, it is good crack. I'm just glad we came out on the other side with the win, because he would have bloody got stuck into me for ages if we didn't.
And let's go back to one moment in the game where your heart must have been in your arsehole and his would have been happy as loud. You chucked the ball off the line out and he's gone for the intercept, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was gone. He was gone, wasn't he?
Do you know what? We spoke about it all week as well, because he's got a tendency for taking interceptions, and I threw it, and honestly, it was like it was slow motion, man. If he had taken that intercept and scored, I would have probably retired. But yeah, then as soon as he slapped it down, I was straight in the referee's ear trying to get a yellow card off him, which he wasn't too happy about. But,
get that melt off the field. That's a yellow. That's a yellow. Yeah, exactly. He's a melt.
I'm just glad.
Gaddafi's got to go.
But no, lucky enough, it didn't stick, and I got away with it.
Good stuff. Now, it's been a huge week for you. Did you celebrate after the game by taking your brother out and showing him around Belfast looking for Titi Von Tramp? Or now you're, and congratulations to this, been named in the Ireland squad for the Six Nations. Was it head down, get the carbs in, get the recovery, get the more carbs in? That's what I used to do.
I think you know what me and Fred are like. No, we did have a couple of drinks afterwards. We actually had a bit of a team social with the Ulster boys after. And then Fred and the family went out to Belfast. We met for a couple of drinks later on. But Fred was over with his missus, so he was tame enough.
He was behaving,
so,
was he?
Yeah, he was on best behaviour. So it was nice. It was good.
Let's be honest, he's punching way above his weight, isn't he? With her.
Oh mate, I couldn't believe it. Every time I see it, I don't understand how it happened.
That can't be true,
mate. He'd be punching above his weight with a 90-year-old granny. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with a 90-year-old granny. Hey, talking about punching above your weight, Belle, have you got a partner? You say partner now. It could be a man or woman.
She's actually sat opposite me, so go careful what you say.
Oh, bless her. God bless her. Tell her my thoughts are with her at this moment. Was mum over for the
yeah,
match?
Yeah, she was, yeah. Yeah, she was. She was over. She was pissed out of her head, mate. I went up to the after match function afterwards, and she was on the table with Jack McGrath, and I walked over, and all I heard her say was, "Oh, it's great to meet you. You're a Munster legend." And I was just, "Oh my god!" It's the worst thing you could say to a Leinsterman. But
she meant Munster legend. Well. She meant Munster legend. How is she after? Because me and Freddie were chatting about it. She got trolled, didn't she, on social media? How is she now?
Yeah, mate, she's good. She's fucking. She takes it all with a pinch of salt. She likes to play dumb, my mum, but she's very clever with her way. So, I think she's probably got more followers on Twitter and Instagram than what I've got. Yeah, she goes well.
That's all good. He's bothered about, mate, is numbers on the social media.
She's a legend, is your mum. Let's talk ruggers then. Obviously, massive week in terms of qualifying for the quarterfinals. We know you're going over to Toulouse for that game. But more importantly for you personally and in the interim, there's the Six Nations and you've been called into the squad, which is absolutely brilliant. Freddie loved it as well from one of his tweets, which is nice to see. A bit of brotherly love. But let's talk about the squad. A few changes yourself. You're in there. I know you went to the training camp just before Christmas or just after Christmas, whenever it was.
Yeah.
You and Cooney in there, surely starting against Scotland in the first game.
Oh, we'll have to wait and see. No, obviously it was awesome to get called into that squad like middle of last week. Great little confidence booster and stuff. But then, like, I'm just very much looking forward to getting down there and getting stuck in. Now, obviously, I've not been involved in an international setup before. Obviously, I went down to that stock take camp, but that was only for a day. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be good to get stuck in and sort of train with some guys that are at the top of the game and hopefully, like I said, push for a start or even a bench and get on and get that first cap and hopefully get a successful first Six Nations.
We spoke about you a couple of weeks ago actually on the pod and timings in rugby and what happened with you when obviously Cipriani went to Gloucester and it created this amazing opportunity for you, which you've grabbed with both hands you know, ultimately now you're in the Ireland squad. Looking back on it, at the time you'd have probably really not liked what was happening, but it's clearly turned out to be the best move possible, right?
Yeah, it has. I think I spoke to you boys maybe last year about it. Like, obviously, I was disappointed to leave Gloucester. I loved it there. I was living the dream in Cheltenham. I had great mates there and was playing regular rugby. But then, like, I'm under no illusions. I knew that when we signed Danny Cipriani, like, I'd be struggling to get game time. And the stars sort of aligned with the Ulster move and them needing to fly half. And it was just an opportunity where I couldn't really turn it down. Obviously, I knew I was Irish qualified and I had that in my back pocket. But I think the good thing is, like, it's worked out for both parties. Like, Danny Cipriani's been class for Gloucester. Obviously, he got player of the season last year. And Gloucester, I think, had probably one of their best seasons for years. And also, I've come over here, and like you said, I feel like I've grown as a rugby player and sort of, I'm obviously making the step into the Irish setup now. So, I think all round it's been a good move, albeit at the time I was pretty disappointed with how it went down.
And have you worked on your Irish accent and the anthem and all that stuff?
I can hear the twang.
There's a little bit of it there, but I'm still very much Southwest England in the way I speak. So I haven't learned any of the slang just yet.
Just cry, mate. That's all you need to do is when the camera's on you, just cry.
Grab the badge.
Just like you did, Asia.
Scotland till I die, big fella.
And Billy, Jim can joke about it because he's been through it himself, but you won the World Under 20 Championships with England, didn't you? With Mario Toji and guys like that. It will feel weird, won't it? Turn out for Ireland, I assume.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, it will. Definitely. Like I've not tried lying about it. Like I supported England growing up and, like you said, I represent England at 18s and 20s. But that's the way rugby is now. Like I've still got a lot of family over here in Ireland. My old man especially has always supported Ireland, and like I said, it just fell into place and now I'm over here, like I very much bought into to the Irish style of rugby and the way of living over here, and we're enjoying our time. So I'm as passionate as ever for Ireland. I'm looking forward to getting stuck in, that's for sure.
For the millions of listeners out there, Bill, and we might have dropped considerably after last week with Goody shenanigans on Twitter. It's a joke, Goody. Where is the Irish connection? So you mentioned your old man, but just for the listeners out there, where does that come from?
Yeah, so it's my grandfather. So my dad's dad, who I unfortunately never met. He passed away before I was born.
Paddy?
No, it was Tommy. So that's my side. But obviously, I've still got a lot of cousins and stuff who are down in Dublin way. My dad probably doesn't get over as much as he'd like to see him, but I'm sure that there'll be plenty of them supporting me when I hopefully play for Ireland or at least in the mix.
Well, let's have a little practice then, because obviously Ireland's Call is the song.
Don't you even start if you think I'm going to sing that on
here. Have you not learned the words yet? Come
yeah, I know
the day and come the hour.
Judy, I'm not following
come
you.
Come the power and the glory. No, we'll save it then.
I'll leave you to it. I'll save it for the day it comes.
Exactly, mate. I want it to be a surprise.
Just going back to Ulster for a second, you've captained them this season. I mean, that's come about quite quickly. Have you got to that position? And did you take any tips off Jim? Because I've heard a story which you might want to tell when Jim was captain at Gloucester and you were in the academy. Didn't he? Have you up
Bill.
Against the wall?
Oh, good.
I mean, our shit was
against the wall. What happened?
Do you remember that, Jim, or not?
Matt, I
expect you probably don't, to be fair.
Well, I remember. Yeah, I don't remember it, mate. Tell us.
It was a Monday, and Andrew Stanley was refereeing our conditioning games, and I think our team was battering your team, Jim, and I got a little bit mouthy towards Stan, and on the way back in, you know the sheds that we used to be in.
Oh yeah.
And the I was pits. In the little shed, in the pits, and you grabbed me and turned around to me and basically said that I've achieved nothing in the game, and gave the old William Wallace speech and said that I need to settle down and not pipe up.
So oh my Jim, why so horrible?
Well, look at him now.
He was horrible to me.
Jim, you're saying it like you'd won the World Cup. You played for fucking Scotland, pal.
He called me ugly all the time.
I'm not sorry about that. I'm an honest man. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm an honest man. That's all I can say. But look at you now. So you are welcome, young Bill.
It's all down to you, Jim.
That's great. Thanks ever so much for joining us, Bill. And
no worries.
Good luck in the coming months with Ireland, hopefully.
Cheers, lads. Appreciate
cheers,
it.
Billy. Good cheers, man. Cheers, good luck with Ireland. Mate. Top lad.
Good lad.
I'm saying that, top lad.
Well, mate, the Burns boys are.
Top lads.
They
top
are.
Lads. I'm just disappointed he wouldn't sing with me. Come the day and come
I
the
like
hour.
I like the Irish anthem.
Come the plower and the glory. Do-do-do.
I wonder what the initiation is. Well, rugby is different now, isn't it? But there is an association. His grandfather, Tommy, Thomas Shelby. That's every time I think Tommy, I think Thomas Shelby, is Irish.
Yes.
And that's why I think bloodline's fine. But, you know, he has also rocked up to Ulster through fault or design.
I reckon he's more Irish than your Scottish pal.
Well, he's not, is it?
All right, man.
I'm half Scottish and I'm 6'9" with heels. So half of my blood's Scottish, which is basically... like Kelly Brown, I'm more Scottish than him. No, Kelly Brown's not even Scottish.
Oh, come on, mate. Listen to
Dad's
him.
Irish, mum's English. Not even Scottish. Where you're a fraud.
Where is he born?
Oh, hang on. So it's where you were born. Well, John Barclay was born in Hong Kong. He's not Chinese. So, good lad. I hope he gets a run out. Wait, I mean, it's easy to get carried away. We mentioned this before. Conor Murray plays well at the weekend.
Yep.
But we've been chomping at the bit for John Cooney to get a run. Billy's got a real opportunity because Johnny Sexton is limping somewhat. But I should have asked him about the captaincy. I suppose it doesn't really matter to him, does it?
No,
but
I mean, it's a tough question for him.
Everything's pointing to the fact that he might be in for a definite bench spot, if not starting.
You also mentioned Goody, George Fairbank called up to the England squad today, and Fraser Dingwall as well. First of all, on those, I suppose, how surprised... I mean, George Fairbank's been tearing up trees, hasn't he, in the Premiership, but Fraser Dingwall has come from Les Field.
Yeah, I speak to a few people at Northampton and fans and stuff like that, and Fraser Dingwall is thought very highly of. But in reality, you look at Northampton, you know, we're not going back to the salary cap, but we're talking their outside centres. They've got Proctor, who's been immense, and one of my favourite players over the last 18 months, Rory Hutchinson. So Dingwall's not actually played that much. And he's come into the England squad, and people will see that as a surprise. When you see him play and when you hear about him and you talk to people about him, he's very highly regarded and rated. But again, it's an Eddie Jones selection. There's a little bit of looking forward. There's a little bit of Slade's injured. Great to see Devoto in there as well. But you know, you look at the centres, they've got Devoto, Dingwall, Manu and Jonathan Joseph. And then do you put the old argument again about Ford and Farrell? Do you put Farrell at 12? But Dingwell's exciting, hasn't played a massive amount, but as ever, Eddie picks who he wants.
Another one that Scotland have lost out on Jim, Fraser Dingwall.
Yeah, well, there you go. The name says it all, doesn't it? Swore his allegiances to 25,000 reasons why England. Maybe it isn't about that. He's quality. I mean, Northampton, and you know, you don't want to talk about the salary cap.
Oh, but mate, you talk about, Jim. I mean, you're boring our listeners.
You talk about teams bringing through young English players. For me, Northampton are that next team. Look at the profile of that team and what Chris Boyd's doing. Grayson's another one. At 10, James Grayson, Alex Moon as well.
Mooney.
Spoke about him a couple of weeks ago. Said he was carving up, long hair, long lid on him. He's been really good, really physical. Been putting Laws into six with Ribbons playing as well. Both of them, I mean, Northampton are a very good team. And I tell you what, Eddie Jones always said it. He's a smart man. He is a smart man. He knows his ruggers and he picks guys that not necessarily are in form right now. Goody mentioned with Dingwall, he's not played as much, but I think he definitely, I mean, of course he does. He's one of the best coaches in the world. He's got an eye for talent.
Why have you been so nice to Eddie?
I need to be nice to someone. I don't know. I'm just trying to rebuild bridges, Goody, for us.
Mate, I'm all right. I don't need to build any bridges with mate. Saracens fans. 11 out of 12 Premiership fans agree with everything I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Well, the competition for the biggest bolter in that England squad is either surely Fraser Dingwall or someone you'll know well, Goody, Jacob Umunger.
Yeah.
Well, I know Madder.
Do you?
His mum's mates, my mum. They work together, apparently.
All right. Yeah, listen, Jacob's played really well over the last sort of month, 6 weeks for Wasps. Obviously a very talented kid. And it's one of those things, you pick apart squads when Eddie Jones announces a squad. And, you know, you got to feel a little bit for Joe Simmons at Exeter, who is playing week in, week out at the top club and playing exceptionally well. Hardly missed a kick at goal all year.
What about Marcus Smith?
Marcus played all right.
He's been involved in squads before.
Yeah. But Jacob, you know, his performances for Wasps, we saw the game at Bristol, he got man of the match and scored a cracking try and managed the game really well. But yeah, I mean, Eddie Jones, he's got one eye on the here and now and one eye on the future as well, hasn't he?
And he knows that with a name like Umunger, you're going to be a good... I've never heard of another Umunger in my life, ever.
Mike Tana.
What?
Mike Tana.
That's my point. Of course it is. Tana Umunger.
Yeah, like, but Mike Umunger is his dad, isn't it?
But that's my point.
You just said I've never heard of any other Umunger in my life.
I was about to say, apart from Tana.
Oh, of course you are.
Who probably wants to be his dad, even though that Mike is a quality player as well. He played at Cov. That's my point.
There we go.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
But it's interesting. You look at the selection, though. You know, talk about number eights.
Oh, here he is. You tweeted it.
I did. And Don Brandt and Sam Simmons, just to let you know, Eddie, he's carving up week in, week out. He's probably faster than anyone else on the field. He's more powerful. He's making breaks. No point am I saying he shouldn't be picked or whatever, but your back row of Tom Curry, Ben Earl, Ted Hill.
He likes Ted Hill.
Ludlam and Underhill. They're obviously all very, very, very similar.
Who's playing eight?
Ben Earl, I reckon. Yeah. And I tweeted about it last night.
That's only because Don Brandt isn't in there and Sam Simmons. You're thinking Billy goes off injured. I mean, you got to feel for him with his broken arm. So you're thinking of like for like. That's why you're saying Don Brandt.
You've got to have number eight. So the three I put were Ben Earl. Surely you've got to have two out of these three. Ben Earl, Don Brandt, and Sam Simmons.
What about Nathan Hughes not getting a recall? He's playing better at Bristol.
No.
He's gone quiet, really. So yeah, he had a couple of good games. But then, you know, when they played Saracens, apparently he was anonymous.
He's not rocked up for England ever. And that's,
you know,
harsh.
Against Wasps, he was anonymous at times. So, but I suppose that you look at the balance of the squad. He's picked six guys that could play second row. And he's picked five back rowers that all, to me, look like those six and a half or sevens.
Ben Earl packs down at eight, doesn't he, for Saracens? But he normally starts on the flank. But you're saying he's the only one. There's no big ball carrier that would replace Billy there. Is that a concern for England in terms of winning the Six Nations?
Well, I feel a little bit harsh saying it, but I will. I don't think Billy was at his best at the World Cup.
Why are you being mean to the Saracens boys?
I think
talk about kicking a man while he's down.
It's horrible. But I think with someone like Ben Earl, they offer a slightly different ball carrying option. Anyone who's watched him, he's a brilliant ball carrier. He's got the step, he's got the power. Speed's probably his point of difference. He's probably carries very similar to Sam Simmons. And that's maybe why he gets the nod, because arguably slightly better over ball, maybe a little bit quicker. I'm not privy to the speed times. But Ben Earl he's got game time. Yeah. So he's come through and he's rapid. I'm like Goody. I'm a surprised Don Brandt. I don't know.
Don Brandt was very good on Saturday against Clermont.
He's been great.
His ball skills.
He's been great in Europe. Yeah, he has. But Is he fit enough? And again, it's so easy to say because you look like a sack of spuds. But maybe that's maybe they just think, mate, we want to see the best version of you.
I think they have mentioned that.
And a lot of people say this. You can judge someone by their weight, by visually how they look. I mean, some people have an underactive thyroid. Myself, some people have an overactive thyroid.
I think it's the other way around him, yeah.
So,
I just think with it, I agree your sentiment about it, and you can find a reason not to pick someone. I can't find a reason not to pick Sam Simmons.
We should have a quick word on Billy and his injury. A fourth broken arm. How worrying is that for him? I know you guys have probably had injuries that have recurred and have come back, but to have a fourth broken arm, how worrying is that for him moving forward?
Yeah, I'm not too sure how many surgeries he's had. He's got a plate in each of his arms. And I was having this conversation with Grant Gilchrist, actually. Did we have him on the phone? I think we did. So Grant Gilchrist had a similar thing where he broke his arm, broke it again, had it plated, broke the other one. And they're awful injuries, apparently. They take ages to heal. I don't know why. I mean, but I know you're going to be absolutely shocked, but I'm not a doctor.
Are you not?
No, I'm not. But they are nasty injuries to have. And I think that, it goes without saying, he's done it again. It's a tough one. You know, will he come back from it? I'm sure he will. Is it a long process? Yes. Does he need to have surgery again? Does he need to have his old plate taken out? Does he need to have a new one put in? The complications of having plates in your arms and the healing process that goes around there. I do sound like a doctor.
You do?
I do, yeah. The blood supply is slightly limited there because there's not as much.
You're making it.
Yeah, I am. I'm absolutely winging it. You've got to feel for him, for anyone, regardless of what position you're in. When Grant Gilchrist did it and he was having problems, you wondered whether he'd come back. He has, touch wood. He's not had any problems since. And you're hoping that the same goes for Billy.
And just before we finish on England, Steve Borthwick's confirmed as leaving by the end of the season, which means Leicester, if that's where he's going,
That is a done deal for months.
You mean Steve Borthwick's skills coach?
Skills coach. Skills
coach. Poor bloke.
What are you laughing at?
Mate, it's hilarious.
Oh boy, it could be line out skills.
Well, there you go.
He'd be very good at that. Line out.
Well, he gets on the ladder, doesn't he? And
fellas, we're coming for line outs.
Maybe next season until he rocks up at Leicester. But Simon Amor has been appointed as England's new attack coach. We haven't really spoken about that yet. Do you think he will go well? Why do you think Eddie's done that?
Simon's in the system, isn't he? So he was the Sevens coach. It's interesting, obviously, with the Olympics in the summer. He's doing the Six Nations, and I think James Rodwell's taken over as head coach for the Sevens. Is he the ginger lad? Yeah, for the tournaments that Simon Amor can't do. And then Simon Amor's doing the Olympics for Great Britain's team, which is England's team, I think, effectively. Yeah, I mean, anyone taking a job with Eddie Jones knows you're going to get worked hard. So maybe Simon Amor didn't have a choice. We don't know. But listen, I mean, when you're looking at someone that he's got no 15s experience over the last however long in terms of coaching, but
Give him a chance, mate.
What I'm saying is someone that Eddie Jones can control and someone that, you know, has got innovative ideas from the Sevens game could work wonderfully. We don't know. What we do know is he's been successful as a Sevens coach. He's well respected in that sort of field. And ultimately, you know, you've got some good young backs to work with. And working for Eddie Jones, as we know, the turnover of coaches is huge. Year in, year out, people come, people go. And you just hope it's a good relationship with him. And he actually gets to be able to stamp his own authority on it, not just, I've got to do what Eddie says sort of thing. So we're not privy to that information in the camp. Proudfoot coming in, obviously did a wonderful job with South Africa. You just look at what their forwards did to our forwards and you go, let's go and get the best man for it. So
he's a proud man by all accounts.
He is a proud man.
Get it?
I do. So yeah, you know, we actually don't know. And Eddie Jones has named this squad and it's kind of got one eye on a longer term squad with some of the youth in there. Eddie Jones only got a 2-year deal at the minute. How long Simon Amor got the deal for? Like we could conceivably see more change. Who knows? But hopefully we start off, we've got France away. Imagine Sean Edwards. It's fucking English. I'm fucking English, but tackle.
Lega, le placage.
Fair un placage, mate.
Rest on bars. Yes, we've had to get encore. J'ai faim de baguette.
But imagine, like, he's going to be chomping at the bit and the French boys will be ready.
I think France are going to be good.
You're mentioning France, the French boys. You think they're going to be good? Their squad is as fresh as they come, isn't it?
Yeah.
Only one player over 30 in their squad and 19 uncapped players.
Smart by Galtier.
I mean, either shit, they're either going to be shit or bust.
It's a four-year plan. I need to keep my money for 4 years, which is 1.3 million euros. I don't know.
Why do you hate Gaultier?
Matt, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
I do. I don't know why I just said that. I stonewalled lied to your face.
Stonewalled lied?
Yeah, I don't like him. Yeah, I mean, France have got some quality players. We've spoken about it before. Massive, massive ballsy move by Sean Edwards to go over there. I think he'll be the game changer. You know why? Because he rocked up to the press conference in full tracksuit and notepad.
Got my notepad, I'm like, taking notes. Taking notes, listen to French.
So good, speaking French. Fair play to him, love the bloke.
Fair le fucking placage, aggressivity. Fucking the lot.
Oh, rest on bar.
And Jim, Scotland. A few new faces, but probably not quite as fresh as some of the other squads.
Now shit.
What do you think, Goody? What are your thoughts, mate?
No, this is you're Scottish.
No, come on, what are your thoughts?
I think Scotland, I don't want to say it.
You can.
I think they might beat England.
Don't try and wing me back, Goody. Don't try and win me back and put me in your good book. Are you lying or not? Are you lying to me?
Yeah, of course I'm lying.
Are you or not, though?
I don't know. But it's a hard, the Six Nations is a hard one to call now,
yeah,
isn't
you've
it?
Been, yeah. You've been a little shit this last week and you look at you now, you bring it right back.
Not to you, though.
Well, not to me.
I did see one helmet on Twitter say that Jim and Goody's relationship is now over. I was like, all right, you know that, do you?
He knows.
He knows.
Not now. What? Not now. You know that. That's why you said that.
Come on, Scotland, give me some.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, there's a few new names in there. Ratu Tagevi for GN7.
That is a Scottish name. If I you mean, one.
Yeah, Ratu, mate, is, I think he's north of the Hebrides, which I think you're in Greenland or maybe in the Antarctica. But he's, mate, put him in on YouTube. Oh, my Fijian, Scottish, I mean. So he's quality. They put him in. Hoggy, friend of the show, is Skipper. Captain. That's the big thing for me. With Scotland, when we've spoken about it before, you've never been able to say he's a Scotland captain. He's never kept his position in the team, let alone be captain. So they've got the right man.
His lid's going to get a lot of airtime now.
Shave it. Now is the time.
I thought it looked better the other day.
There's a big patch at the front.
Yeah, I like Hoggy.
This is the thing with Hoggy. I think sometimes he can come across as a bit of a joker. Not in a bad way. In a good way. Today. In a good way, because he's engaged. He comes on the podcast. Actually, Alan Wynne Jones is going to come on here and talk about bushes.
Well, let's try. Let's get him on. Well, let's get him on. You keen?
Owen?
Well, you said he hates you, so.
He's definitely not going to come on. There you go. So that's what I'm saying. So these lads ain't going to come on. Where Hoggy comes on, he's quite transparent. He's active on social media. He is the modern day professional rugby player. And I like that about him. But he's also a world-class player. And he's in a position which can see everything. He can see everything in front of it. I know it's weird to have a 15. The big point is he's guaranteed. Him and Finn are the two guaranteed starters in that team.
Yeah.
He's experienced. He's been on two Lions tours.
Do you reckon Stuart Hogg is Scotland's greatest ever rugby player?
Yes.
I would say
there's a couple of us probably in that conversation. I don't know why you're laughing. We should apologise as well. We had Rob Wade right on last week and we were talking about the Lions tour of 95. It's 97.
97, mate.
You said it 95 did as well. I? Yeah, listen to it back. No Duncan Taylor. Centres is a very good position now for Scotland. Sam Johnson, guaranteed starter. Matt Scott, maybe, if he can play 13 as well. He's been brilliant for Edinburgh. Hashtag always. Your mate, we've had him on, friend of the show, Rory Hutchinson as well.
Well, is it true that Gregor Townsend had a big whinge and said it's ridiculous that the Premiership are playing the week before?
Basically blaming Saracens.
6 days.
Blaming Saracens again. And that's why Duncan Taylor didn't get picked. But he's picked Sean Maitland.
Yeah, but I think...
All right, mate.
Yeah, but I know why. Because Duncan needs managing. Whereas Sean Maitland doesn't, but it doesn't matter now because he's been relegated. So
could have picked him.
Just wow, well, here we go.
Could have picked anyway. Him. Said, Saracens, you need some cash. Here's 50.
It's a mess.
Don't pick him at the weekend. I'll have him. Oh,
is this Scotland's year? Who knows? You've heard it here first. Goody thinks they're going to beat England.
Oh, come on, mate.
It's coming home. Nah. No, it ain't. It's fucking coming home. No, it ain't.
Well, speaking of the Guinness Six Nations, the Guinness Match Pint Predictor is back this season as well.
Oh,
and you
yes.
can win pints of Guinness each week.
Woo!
As well as match tickets and much more, all by just predicting the outcome of the Guinness Six Nations fixtures every week. To get involved, download the free Match Pint app and join our Rugby Pod League by entering the code RugbyPod.
Rugby pod
to go up against Jim and Goody, and you can also set up private leagues with your mates as well.
I'm going to do it this year. I didn't do it in the World Cup.
I did it in the World Cup.
I missed the first 2 weeks.
You came last. I came first. You came last.
Matchpoint is also a sports pub finder, a free app and a website, so you can use it to find a great sports pub near you to watch all the action during the Guinness Six Nations. Speaking of which, round one, Wales, Italy, Ireland, Scotland, France v England. Pick your winners quickly.
Wales against Italy.
Wales.
Ireland against Scotland, Jim.
Ireland. I've got nothing else that says that Scotland are going to win.
Agreed.
This is the hardest one. England.
France against England.
I'm going to say France.
Oh, why have you been horrible, yeah, Jim?
I'm not just... I'm going to say France.
You nicked what I was going to say, so I'm going to say England. Come on, England. Grand slam.
Arrogant.
Right, shall we finish things off with the good, the bad and the ugly? And you got a new sponsor, haven't you, Goody?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've got the biggest online rugby retailer in the world on board.
You are welcome, sports fans.
Lovell Rugby are in.
Yep, they are. And Rugby Pod listeners get 15% off everything on their website, including all the latest Six Nations gear, boots and training wear. So just head to lovell-rugby.co.uk to get your hands on all that discounted stash.
I think my gloves are on there as well, so get buying, people. Yeah, plenty of good this week. We'll start off, obviously, in the Champions Cup, and we're going to stay in the Champions Cup, really. So, Leinster, wasn't a great performance by them over in Treviso, but 6 games, 6 wins, likewise to lose. Dispatching of Gloucester at home, 6 games, 6 wins, both pretty good. Exeter as well, they didn't lose a game, played 6, won 5, drew 1. They beat La Rochelle 33-14 and end up as second seeds. Therefore, if they win their quarterfinal, they get a semi-final in England. See what I did there?
Yeah, I see.
They'll have a semi.
You pause after semi. And a semi. They're excited.
Yeah, very excited. What else was good? Leone Nakarawa scored 2 minutes into his return for Glasgow.
Return debut.
Yeah, someone sign him. I mean,
he got binned after.
Who's got money in the salary cap to sign him? You better sign him quick. Apparently Saracens are after him.
Say now, Wasps ain't got any.
What else was good? Saracens on field.
Mate, don't try
Saracens
and bring it back. They
on field. I don't care. Saracens on field, second half performance, and in particular, Richard Wigglesworth and Alex Lewington with their box kick receipt game that I think won them the game in the end. What else was good this week? Well, the England squad's been announced, so a couple of call-ups get a mention. First and foremost, the Mighty Wasps. Jacob Umunga. Congratulations. That's pretty good for him. Very good for him. What else was good? As well, I'm a big fan of Ben Earl. He's been playing exceptionally well. He deserves his shout. Other ones to note, Furbank. Love his tash as well. He's been playing really well.
Very rare you see a young man with a tash.
No, I like it. That's why I like it.
He's just showing that he's got a growth.
Edgy. I bet hell of a bush.
Yeah,
as well.
It's probably edgy. No, you're right.
And Fraser Dingwall. And great to see Ollie Devoto in there as well. So plenty of good there. But the good this week, we mentioned a couple of their players in Furbank and Dingwall. But it goes to Northampton Saints. A huge second half performance to beat Lyon 36-24 over in Lyon. They were 17-5 down at half time. Sam Vestey, Miel Bergino's, and Chris Boyd go in there, reading the riot act. Vestey's playing with his very red balls and talking to them about tactics. And it comes good. They had a brilliant performance in the second half. So Saints fans delighted to make the knockouts. The bad. We'll start up in Sale. They got spanked at home 45-7 by Glasgow. They did have a young side out and some notable youngsters. Dean Schofield's stepson, Tom Curtis, played at 10.
Oh, really?
Lovely lad, actually. He used to come down and watch me at Worcester. And he had, so he used to get coached. So when Dean was over in Toulon, Scoey was over in Toulon, Johnny Wilkinson used to coach him. And then he came to Worcester and I was there. And he came and did a kicking session with me.
I thought, I do not want to play rugby.
No, he looked at me and he went,
This game is not for me.
He's like, I've been coached by Johnny Wilkinson. I went, oh, fucking hell's he? Yeah. He went, yeah, you're much better.
I've never seen a man sweat so much. In Worcester,
so,
in the winter.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're bad for Sale, but good to see Tom get a game. What else is bad? Ospreys. They're in it every week. They lost again, but the reason they're in it, not because they lost to Munster away, but they didn't get into Munster's 22 until the 79th minute of the game. That's bad. That's real bad. What else was bad? Billy Vunipola breaking his arm again. That's bad news. Well, I've written down Nigel Owens here, but actually, I'm going to flip it because of Jim's input. And basically, Jim said that Ian Davis, the TMO, was the guy that said that was play on. But the inaccuracy at the end there, when you've got big decisions to make, the knock on from Elliot Daly onto Brees Dillon's head that leads to a penalty that leads to Saracens winning the game, costing Glasgow qualification. When you're the TMO, just park the biscuits, boys. Just watch the game.
They do like a biscuit. I've seen them eat.
Park the biscuits and watch the game. That was pretty bad. What else was bad? Are you ready for this?
I don't know what to expect with you these days.
Wasps. Lost at home 27-0.
Oh my God. This is like, you're reverse engineering me here, aren't you? That's what you're doing. So you're thinking, right, I'm going to bring it back. I've absolutely bagged Sarries for the...
I've just been honest about the salary cap and them cheating.
Did you look at your screen time at the weekend or not? You did. You showed me it was 15 hours on Saturday. And then you're like, right, I need to do something here to take, you know, take the shine away from, you know, Wasps gloating as well, because Elliot Daly went to Saris.
I don't believe Wasps gloated whatsoever.
Okay, we'll see.
So yeah, Wasps lost 27-0 at home to Bordeaux.
Oh my God.
And Dai Young said it was pretty embarrassing. So yeah, they have to go in the bad. I'm sorry, Wasps fans, but I'm honest.
They're safe now, though.
Yeah, they're safe. Saracens are going down to the championship. What else was bad? Eddie Jones. How do you not pick Sam Simmons? I'm just not having that. So I'm naming Eddie Jones in the bad there for not picking Sam Simmons or potentially Don Brandt, but Jim doesn't agree. But the bad this week, it's basically got to go to Saracens and the relegation and what's gone on. We're now at our final destination. Saracens have been relegated. They've cheated beyond belief. They are the bad this week. The ugly, couple of bits of ugly actually. And we'll mention two red cards. We spoke about them both earlier. Big Willie, Little Willie's red card and his shoulder charge to the head of Brice Dulin. Mm-hmm. Ross Batty's shoulder charge to the head of John Cooney. No one touches the Cooney.
Mate, well, that's the bad thing about
it. No one touches the Cooney. Thing,
you do not touch him.
Not having that.
Not with the shoulder, anyway.
No, not having that. But the ugly this week, not Saracens, Jim.
No?
No.
Does it involve me?
It involves a bit of school duggery. A little bit of school duggery at scrum time.
What?
And Clermont Auvergne.
Oh, I saw it.
Yeah,
Slimini.
I'm calling this absolute cheating.
Mate, because he was not happy. No, he was not happy.
So, I'm telling you now, Sipili Fatia, the prop, is getting absolutely hosed at scrum time.
He's got a sore neck, mate. He's got a sore neck.
Absolutely hosed at scrum time. Slimini, me old 500 bags a year, and the best tight head perhaps in Europe, if not the world, at scrummaging. He's on the bench. He's been taken off. The old doc walks over, tells the old prop, Fatia, he said, mate, you're getting your head shoved up your arse in French. You better get off. And Fatia doesn't understand it because he doesn't speak that much French, apparently. And he's just like, take a knee. So he just drops to one knee.
Le tête bien ramad up le shitter.
And so, you know, they were under the pump. A home quarterfinal.
Pump?
Yeah.
See what we've done there.
A home quarterfinal was on the line for them because had they have drawn, because Harlequins had the ascendancy then, I think they were 7 points down, Harlequins. Had they have drawn, Clermont would not have got the home quarter final, I don't believe. And ultimately, by hook or by crook, they take Fartier off and they bring Slimini on. And next scrum, oh yeah, Clermont got the penalty at scrum time, don't they? And then they kick it out and it's game over pretty much, isn't it?
Who was it loose head for Quins?
Joe Mahler. I don't know whether he was still on at the time, was he?
We've seen it before, haven't we? With Slimini.
Yeah. France, Wales, yeah. Six Nations. I'm just going to say it now.
Cheating?
The French are cheating.
Is that cheating?
I mean, I've annoyed people at Saracens for being honest. I'm going to be honest about the French. Let's bring a whole country into this. The French have cheated, not only in the Six Nations, but also Clermont in the Champions Cup.
Is that cheating or is that a manipulation or is it the same? I'll leave it out there. Let's leave it out there for the millions.
To be fair, the hard thing on it is, as much as you want to go, that's cheating, and he's definitely not injured.
If he's got a sore neck, he's got a sore neck.
You can't physically go to someone. Actually, I don't believe you, mate. You better scrummage because of the dangers that come with that, but... yeah, I mean, I'm. It's ugly. That's the ugly this week. Clermont, the doctor, the coach, the lot of them cheating at scrum time.
I enjoyed it. But yeah, maybe it's in my DNA now.
In fairness, the line of the weekend has to go to Lawrence Dallaglio. Because Lawrence did say on TV, and it's a little bit like...
Oh, I enjoyed it.
It's a little bit like the chicken coming home to roost with Saracens and cheating on the salary cap. And this is how we're going to leave it. He just went, it's not as if Harlequins haven't had their own fake injury issues before in the Champions Cup.
Big long art geezer.
So what goes around comes around.
Thanks, Giddy. And you've got a shout out to finish off with as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Unfortunately, it's a bit of a sad one. And all our thoughts are going out to East Dorset Rugby Football Club and the family of Jamie Davis, who sadly took his own life recently. He was a beast in the front row and a gentle giant off the pitch, but a long-term sufferer of PTSD as an army veteran. A GoFundMe page has been set up to help his wife and two kids. So if you search Jamie Davis Memorial Fund and the guys at East Dorset Rugby Football Club, they just want to encourage everyone to talk to each other as well. Life's hard, shit happens, but we all need to be a team on and off the pitch. So big thoughts with everyone down at East Dorset and the family of Jamie Davis.
Hello.
Thanks, Goody. Thanks, Jim. And thanks to everyone at home for listening as well. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on Twitter, review us on iTunes, and check out our Superfans monthly subscription service at patreon.com/therugbypod.
And one thing that Tim wanted to mention was thanks, Andy Rowe, for not coming. So you've got his job today.
Imagine what he's doing, eating copious amounts of cat food, sleeping in a cat litter tray. Anyway, hell of a week. Rugby pod.
Pod, pod, pod.